Welcome in on a hopeful, fabulous Friday. The NBA play-in ends tonight. That means let the playoffs begin. Tigers get another player and another coach. And the spring fan fest, not a game, but a fan fest, that is canceled. We've got what I think is going to be a busy show. Let me bring in Landon Schmidt here right away to let me know. We do have on the docket Andy Schiffman to talk NBA, our agent from Chicago. And we do have Jonah Dillon. A lot of things to talk about, including that canceled Spring Fest with him. But we've had an issue with the phones. I don't know if that has just been fixed or not.
Unfortunately,
oh,
no.
Oh, no. Okay.
But we are brainstorming over here.
Okay. Hopefully we get those guys. If not, it'll be Landon and I doing a lot of talking today. First off, I got to say, the Strait of Hormuz is open. And because of that, the stock market is going crazy. Dow Jones up over 1,000. S&P 500 up 90. Every day is a new record for the S&P 500. Now it's 7,131. This is crazy stuff. The price of oil will go down, down, down if the Strait of Hormuz stays open. I'm sure President Trump is hoping that is the case with the midterms right around the corner. So let's just hope that there is peace. Israel and Lebanon have stopped for the moment. And that strait is open, and that has made the stock market today go crazy. So the play-ins tonight, we've already talked about that. I think we need to make some picks today. And we will go all the way through the NBA playoffs. As I tell you, this portion of the show brought to you by Family Leisure. And you know what? It took a while, but it finally happened. There is a new sale. We're calling it the Battle of the Brands. I mean, you will be amazed from now to May 10th, the Hot Tub and Swim Spa Expo. That's what they're calling it. I'm calling it the Battle of the Brands because there are seven manufacturers all fighting for your business. Hot tubs start at $34.99. Swim spas start at $16,999, 17 grand. That's the beginning price. You ever see those swim spas? They're giants. They're so cool. Mention this ad, you get a free cover lift with your spa purchase. All you got to do is get to I-40 and Witten Road. Go see Billy. Go see Lindsay. Tell them we sent you. Get that special gift, and you're going to cash in. We call it the Battle of the Brands. They're saying it's the Hot Tub and Swim Spa Expo. So, Landon Schmidt, we've already sort of said what our play-in picks would be. I took Orlando. You took Charlotte. And then Phoenix and Golden State. I can't even remember how we picked it.
I think we just talked about it and said the teams we want to win.
I think we said Golden State was going to win that.
Yes, you and I agreed
okay.
on that one.
Yeah. So, we're going to differ, but we're going to go. We'll start with the East. The Detroit winner over Charlotte or Orlando. I think Detroit, the number one seed in the East, will have home court advantage until the finals, depending on who wins in the West. But Detroit, I think, is going to win this series.
I'm right there with you. I don't think the Magic or the Hornets get past the Pistons.
The Philadelphia 76ers without Joel Embiid. Now, remember, he had that appendix emergency surgery. They did the appendectomy. It's successful. He was sitting in street clothes on the bench the other night. I'm not sure when he comes back. I think he'll come back in time for maybe the later games in this series with Boston. They're the 7 seed. Boston, the number 2 seed. What an amazing year they have had. They were the number 2 seed in that position before Jason Tatum came back. Jason Tatum came back, and his chemistry with Jaylen Brown didn't miss a beat, and he looked terrific. I think Boston is a great 2 seed. I don't think they'll have any problem with Philadelphia, especially since Embiid's going to miss part of this series.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the Celtics definitely win this series, but I think it's going to be a little bit more exciting than just a clean sweep. I think the 76ers got a few games in them, but I think it'll be competitive, but I think Boston's going to handle them.
The New York Knicks are at home against Atlanta. I don't know. I've seen some people say this thing goes six. I think the Knicks easy here against Atlanta. As good as Atlanta has played once they got rid of Trae Young, that was so interesting to me. There's a great example of addition by subtraction, but the Knicks are too good.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think this is going to be super competitive at all. I think the Knicks roll through, no problem.
And then Cleveland against Toronto. Cleveland, last year's darling, will, I think, handle the Raptors, even though they've been a nice surprise this year. Really good job done in Toronto, but Cleveland's the better team. I'm going to take the Cavaliers.
Yeah, very chalky in the East. I think the Cavaliers go as well. I mean, a really good season for the Raptors, but I think they've still got a few more years to keep growing this really young team, and then they'll make a realistic run then, but I think the Cavs are just too much for them this year.
All right, then in the semifinals, you've got Detroit and Cleveland. And I like the number one seed, home court advantage. Give me the Pistons.
Did we already pick the Pistons? I feel like I already picked the Pistons.
No, you picked the Pistons in the game against Charlotte or Orlando.
That's right.
We're going semis here, and then we're going all the way through, buddy.
That's right. That's on me. I agree. Wait. This would be Pistons and Cavaliers.
Yes.
And
you've agreed to that.
I'm going to go Cavaliers.
You go Cleveland here.
I think they're going to be a better put together team. I think the Pistons are about a year away from really making a finals push, so I'm going to go with the Cavaliers.
I agree with you that playoff basketball is different.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that even in the play-in.
Yeah.
But I think Detroit's better than Cleveland.
Detroit's a really good team this year.
They got two stars. They got Cunningham and they got Durin.
Well, you can say the same about the Cavaliers with Donovan Mitchell and James Harden as well. And I think the playoff experience is there with the Cavaliers to make it that far. So that's why I'd rock with Cleveland.
There. We differ there. Boston and the New York Knicks.
You want me to go ahead?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Knicks in that game. I think the Celtics have had a very Cinderella year. Nobody expected them to make it to the playoffs, much less be a 2-seed, but I think the Knicks are just going to be a little bit too much for them. They have the playoff experience. I think they make another run, so I'm going to go with New York.
Wow. So we differ on both the semifinals. I think the Celtics are the team. Okay. I think it's going to be a great series. The Boston Celtics have home court advantage over the Knicks, and I think that'll make the difference. I think that goes to seven. Give me the Celtics. So I've got Detroit and Boston in the final, Eastern Conference Finals. I'm going with the Boston Celtics to get back to the final.
Wow.
So you've got it between Cleveland and New York. Who have you got in the NBA Finals?
I believe in my preseason pick, I had the Cavaliers going all the way back, and I'm going to rock with that again. I think Cleveland's going to go make another nice run in the playoffs and make it back.
Okay. So we've got now the East all set. You've got Cleveland in the final. I've got Boston in the final to take on whoever comes out of the West. Let's start there with them. But let me tell you, this portion of the show brought to you by Miramichi. I'll be at Miramichi on Sunday, and I'm looking forward to playing that golf course. Played it a couple of weeks ago. It was already in marvelous shape. Now, they were letting the greens really grow in full, so it was a little slower. I'll see if it is. See, I got to play Miramichi. That's what I told my wife. I've got to play Miramichi a bunch. Because how else will I know to tell you about it? I do know this. You can't beat the practice facilities. How about a huge driving range? You can't hit the ball out of the driving range, even if you're John Daly or in this day and age, Cam Young.
Or Rory.
You have a putting green that is the biggest putting green of any place I know. It's the best public practice facility there is. It's better than most country clubs. You've got a sand trap to learn and to chip and to hit out of. You've got a chipping green with the ability to practice all kinds of shots, whether it's you're going to run up a 9-iron or you're going to use a 56-degree, you got that choice. You have everything at Miramichi. You got this party deck between 9 and 18 that's elevated with the best, I like to say, the best view in all of Shelby County. Then you just have great competition. You know, they play NCAA tournaments there. They play AJGA junior tournaments there. You can go up tee boxes like I do now and enjoy. It's a walk through the woods. There's hills. It's gorgeous. There's the stream that meanders, and it's tough. And these greens, great condition. Let's see if they are speeded up. I'll let you know that on Monday. Miramichi, that's the total golf experience. So we go to the West. OKC against, we both believe it'll be Golden State. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if it's Golden State or if it's the Phoenix Suns. OKC is going to win this. They're the number one seed throughout the whole thing, no matter what.
Yeah, anytime you string together a season which you have over 60 wins, you're a force to be reckoned with. So I rock with the Thunder.
All right. San Antonio is taking on, I think it's Phoenix, right?
The Spurs are going against the Trailblazers.
I mean Portland. I meant Portland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter at all.
The number two seed is too good. So I think they will dispatch probably five of the Portland Trailblazers. Could be a sweep.
It very well could be. I think this is going to be lopsided. San Antonio.
Then another great series, Denver and Minnesota. I love Jokic and Denver in this one. I think Minnesota, which has pieces, will give them a fight. This is in six. Give me the Nuggets.
Yeah. I go Nuggets. I think it will be a fight, especially early on, but Nuggets. Nuggets.
And then the Lakers hurting. Luka, Austin Reeves, not sure of their physical conditions. Obviously, LeBron is there. Bronny's there, if that means anything. Houston's going to win this series.
Yeah, it fully depends on, I would say, if Luka is back for this series and playing the way he's been playing all year long. In my opinion, the greatest scorer this year, led the league in points all year long. If he's not there, then Lakers really just don't have a shot here. So because of that, I'll rock with the Rockets as well.
All right, so we are all in agreement there. It's Houston with the upset of the Lakers. So now that gets us to the semifinals. Oak City against Houston. Again, I go Oak City all the way here. No problem. That's 4-5.
Yeah, no, I agree. Thunder are too good. They move on.
And then San Antonio and Denver. San Antonio has home court advantage. Denver, as you were talking about with the Cleveland Cavaliers, they have more playoff experience. This is going to be tough.
It's going to be the best series.
I think it's going to be great. Jokic and Wembanyama, oh my goodness. Just thinking about that makes me excited. I think Denver, though, is going to pull the upset. Here's where I think experience pays off.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think one of the biggest takeaways from the last time that the Nuggets played the Spurs was if there's a shot that can be made on Wimby, then the shot is unguardable, and Jokic had a lot of those against Wimby. So I think he continues with that theme, and my favorite player in the NBA is on the Nuggets and has a chance to get a ring this year. That's Jonas Valanciunas.
Oh.
So my boy, Big Val.
Big Val.
Big Val's going to be going.
Just out of curiosity, why is he your favorite guy from his time with the Grizz?
Yeah, so when he was with the Grizzlies, I was checking out the roster, saw he had an awesome last name and a fantastic beard. And if you have those two things, I'm a big fan of you.
Well, I got to tell you, I if I'm looking for a player like that, you got to put Marc Gasol in there, who, of course, went to high school
at
Lausanne.
Uh-huh.
He's probably my favorite. My second favorite, though, in this very similar era, just right after, would be Steven Adams. I would take
Adams
over Valanciunas.
Well, I'm still rocking with Valanciunas.
All right, so that gets us to OKC against Denver. OKC with the home court advantage. OKC is the defending champion, so they've got the experience as well. They know how to play in big games. I think OKC is the best team. I think OKC is going to win the West.
Yeah, I think that's how the things are going to shape up, but because of how I like to change things up, and I think it would be a very interesting series regardless, I'm going to say that the Nuggets inch past the OKC Thunder and make it to the NBA Finals.
All right, so that gets us to, for you, Denver and Cleveland in the finals.
What a finals that would be.
I've got Boston against OKC. I think we have a repeat champion, ladies and gentlemen.
We very well could.
I love the Thunder. I think they will beat Boston. I think it's going to be a great series. Certainly six, maybe seven. Seven would be home court advantage totally for the Thunder. But I think they get it done. I think we get a repeat here. You've got Cleveland and Denver. Who do you have as the champion?
If they make it that far, going through the ringer that they would have to go through to get to the NBA Finals, I don't think once they get there, anything's going to stop the Nuggets from winning it this year.
So you've got Denver over Cleveland. We both agree it'll be somebody from the West. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be a repeat. That's interesting. So, there is going to be great series along the mm-hmm. way. There's just no question about it. And you're not going to see load management. You're not going to see people walking the ball up. You're going to see hard play both sides of the basketball. And this is what we love about the NBA. I've just about had it with the NBA regular season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've talked about how you stop the tanking. I'm not the only one, but you know, I really was hoping to talk to Andy Schiffman about this today.
Well, Dennis agrees with you.
No draft, and Dennis Phillippe agrees with me, but you've got to figure something out. If you didn't have a draft, that ends it up, and it would be so interesting. This is where GMs would really have to make the tough decisions. They'd have to be cunning. They'd have to really have a strategy. They would have a hard cap. A hard fiscal cap. They would have to figure out which players they really think are good or bad. They can't reload the next year with another couple of trades to get more picks. You don't have that ability. You're going to sign long-term contracts, probably 2 or 3 years anyway, to beat out teams to get players. You got to choose the right people. The best scouts, the ones with the best strategy, the ones that know roles, the ones that know how to budget. That would end up making the difference. I think the GM would become even more important if you did not have a draft and you had to go by a hard cap. And you would never have tanking again. Just seems to make so much sense to me. And I think it would be fun to watch the bidding wars that would go on. You might have to have some rookie stipulations. I'm not sure exactly how that would work. There'd probably be some smarter minds than mine. I just think it would be great. It would be outstanding. In the meantime, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the NBA, maybe a little bit on the Tigers. They've got new coaches, a new coach, I should say, and they have a new player. Seems to me a role player. We still haven't seen that big name yet. We'll chat about that in just 1 minute or two right here on Wallo and Friends.
Start your day with Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10 right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
I believe ended up with 61 games, and he missed a lot of games down the stretch as well. And I believe an independent arbitrator denied that one. So it's still a little bit potentially ambiguous in terms of these rulings. But absolutely, I think that the league and the union worked together, made the right decision. Because, again, like it's a league where the players have generally most of the power, right? Like, and this this should be ruled favorably for the players. And I think that if the league ruled otherwise, the union would step in and really have some tough discussions with them over the summer to potentially completely tear up this relatively arbitrary rule at 65 games and really have to revisit it. And so I think it just creates, for now, with everything going on, all these discussions about tanking and revamping that rule, it's one less line item for the league to have to worry about and to address this summer. And I know all the players are definitely happy. And I think it's the right move for sure.
All right. So here's my suggestion on this. Because load management to me is a swear word, a cuss word, an expletive. If I do the math correctly here, 65 games out of 82 is roughly 79.2%. So let's just say 79% of the games, right? If you've got a legitimate injury, if you had to have a toe surgery that keeps you out 6 weeks, if you had to have an emergency appendectomy like Joel Embiid, I forget what happened to Anthony Edwards, but it was a knee issue that that was a legitimate sprain or strain that involved a small tear that needed rest, and you've got the x-rays and the MRIs to prove it. I think those should be taken away. I think if you play 79% of the games that you are healthy for, maybe even up it to 85%, okay? That gives you 15% load management. But if you go to 85% minus the games that you have a legitimate injury excuse, that's fair to me. That's what I think you should do.
I agree, Dave. And the league really just needs to pare down on what the reason is a player missed these games, to your point. Is it quote-unquote load management where it's truly probably more so the decision of the team or the front office or one of these players who maybe has had a great season on a bad team down the stretch who might be eligible for one of these accolades, but because, again, in today's NBA, which I think this will change in the near future, but in today's world where you're incentivized to lose, right? So the front office and the team, et cetera, and you saw this with Ja a little bit, they are incentivized to sit those star players, and maybe it's not ultimately their decision. So there's a lot of factors that play into these decisions when a player, a star caliber player, sits out beyond just the legitimate injury. And I think you really have to draw a line of what is the reason. There needs to be a carved out exception for the instances of Luka, I would say for Anthony Edwards and for Cade Cunningham, if it's close. Now, look, if it's a Cade Cunningham, obviously, who's having a great year but only plays half the season, you know, on the one hand, I don't really think you'd be able to make an argument for, like, a first-team All-NBA because, you know, even as productive as he might have been half those games, I don't necessarily know there's ever been an award given out to a player as good as he may have been during the season who's only played in half the season.
Right.
But I do think if it's close, and just to your point, if there is a documented, legitimate injury and it's well-known and the league doctors and the team doctors can substantiate that, it should be a no-brainer. They should still be in the running if it's close. I agree.
Well, let's face it. They put this rule in because they didn't want the sort of stuff that the Grizzlies pulled with Ja Morant this year.
Sure.
Ja Morant had an elbow sprain since January 21st. An elbow sprain. Come on. And that's why the league had to protect itself. That's why they put up the 65-game rule. But this rule is not fair to the players. It's not fair to them at all. The other rule is supposed to be to make it fair to the fans. But in my opinion, the sliding rule of percentage of games minus the rule minus real injuries, not these fake elbow sprains or a toe injury that doesn't require surgery, that, you know, is just absolutely a load management thing, you know, and I'm building in 15% of the games for that sort of thing if you really feel that's necessary. But if you've got a real injury, that should not count against your ability to get your pay from bonuses and good play. It's just
I agree.
That's just not right.
And you know what? If the league has an issue with it, you've got every team in the league has their own athletic training staff, has their own doctors, right? And if there's some sort of discrepancy, then the league should bring in an independent doctor to make that decision. I think that works both ways.
Yeah.
And that will substantiate any legitimate injury or any case that a team may have for one of its players to be sitting out.
I love that. And an independent doctor would be a fair thing, and you could just decide upon who
they
can
bring
be.
In one Dr. Stephen Schiffman, who is as independent as they come.
There you go. They couldn't have him in Memphis, but he should go do Chicago.
Yeah.
That way,
I would welcome it.
That way, he gets to visit you for free. I think that's the way to do it. All right, along those lines, and Ja. You know, I think it's about a third of the league that for a third of the season tanked this year. I don't know if I've brought this up with you or not, but I'd like to investigate it from an agent's perspective. And I don't mean to be redundant with this thing, but it seems to make so much sense to me because the league cannot help themselves. They can't seem to fix this problem because all these guys want to win so much. They're willing to sacrifice games and their fans, frankly, who pay a lot of money to go to these games to bring out G League rosters, don't fill center positions so they can lose games. Organizational tanks. How do you stop that? Here's how you stop it, in my estimation. You take away the draft. I've already said that. You have a hard cap rule you must live on. This would make the general manager's job even more essential. You got to pick the right guy who's got strategy, who really knows talent. And now everybody can bid on any player that comes that would have been in the draft that's coming into the league. You can bid on them, you know, and when contracts expire, you're bidding on the free agents. Everybody can bid with free agency. That could happen again, but it's going to go against a hard cap. You as an agent, you're still going to get 53% of the revenue if that's still what the cap is. Would you like that, or do you think the draft is essential?
Look, first off, I think no matter whatever potential proposal is brought up, there's always going to be naysayers, there's always going to be criticism, right? There's no perfect solution to this. I do, and we've talked about it here internally in our office, I do like the idea, almost like a separate cap specific to the draft. It goes on your books, it counts against the cap as a whole, but every team has X amount of dollars to spend. I would still love to find some way where yes, like those teams that are bottom of the league, that aren't in the play-in, that aren't in the playoffs, somehow, I don't know what that means. Maybe they get first dibs at bidding on these draft prospects. There needs to be some level of deference given to those teams because as many GMs I've talked to have told me, like, how do you get better if you are a struggling franchise? If you can't attract players to your market and free agency, because then players have all the power. They can choose where to go or not to go in free agency. If you can't work out a trade, the only thing that's left is the draft. And that is the one mechanism where the teams control, for the most part, who they can add to their team to try and make their team better. So there has to be some level of like, okay, if we're going to look at the Washington Wizards, who were the Sacramento Kings, who were historically the last couple of years really, really bad, how do we stack that up against the Thunder or the Detroit Pistons or the Boston Celtics, who are some of the top teams, should they really have a fair shot, each of them, at a top player? I would say no, but I don't know the answer to that. To your point, I don't believe the draft is essential because there's other ways for these players to make money and enter the league. And then from an agent's perspective, Dave, and I've said it for a long time now, you got all these kids who finished up in college, many of whom played until early April, if it's UConn, Michigan, Illinois, Arizona, obviously they played pretty far into the season. And then they turn right around. They're going to the NBA Combine here in Chicago next month, less than a month away. They're flying around the country, working out for these NBA teams up to three or four times a week, right into the draft, right into summer league preparation. So you have some of these young players who started last fall, last summer, working out, preparing for their final season in college. So call that September-ish, let's say. Right into the end of July, when they may have a little bit of a break before they report to their NBA team's market for, you know, preseason work and informal workouts in August, there's really no downtime and no break. And that's when you see a lot of injuries happen during the pre-draft process, during summer league. I've experienced that too many times with my young players. So I would be all for completely taking away the pre-draft process. It saves everyone a lot of time and money and headache. And look, I just think, too, like if you're an NBA general manager and you're an evaluator, right, and you're a decision maker in these front offices and you have the right people on staff that have done their job scouting these players, Like, generally speaking, if it's a player that has played in college, even if it's just 1 year, you've had ample time to review them, to evaluate them. What else do you need? Is coming in to a three-on-three, hour-and-a-half-long workout really going to move the needle? For some teams, they'll say, yes, keep the interview process. That's what matters more than anything, in my opinion.
I'd keep the combine. I would keep the combine.
But just make it about medicals and obtaining medical information and interviewing these players. I don't even think you need to sit there and have this whole five-on-five. You've seen some of these players play a whole season, and now you're sticking them in a setting where you're going to go out there and play 2 days worth of five-on-five. Maybe keep the drill work if you want to see them shoot. But for the most part, you should have a good idea of what this player can and can't do on a basketball court. It's diving into the off-the-court intel that matters a ton for these teams that make these million-dollar investments. Keep that whole part of it. And you can do some version of the combine, some kind of dwindled-down, watered-down version of what we have now as the combine. But just eliminate this whole traveling around for 2 months and flying around. And I know the teams would be happy with it.
Oh, yeah.
You got teams here in the playoffs, Dave. All these teams in the NBA playoffs, they're going to be balancing trying to manage the playoffs and while also preparing for the draft. And it's tricky, right? Because you got almost half the league. We're trying to send players in to work out for these teams. And they say, yeah, we're going to have a workout this day, but it's going to be run by one low-level assistant coach. None of the primary decision makers or head coach are going to be here because they're on the road with the team preparing for the playoffs. What good does that do?
Would you, if we did this no draft and hard cap, we have a salary structure that's got rookie contracts in place, but now you're in a bidding war for these guys. That's the one area. Would you keep the stipulation of a percentage that you could go no higher on with a rookie, or is this going to be part of the free-for-all?
Well, I think that's ultimately something that's voted on by the players' union, and it's a bit tricky, right? Because the voting party, which is made up of the union, when you have these discussions between the league and the players' union, keep in mind, the players that obtain and receive these rookie-scale contracts, they're not even in the league yet, so they have no say. So you have NBA veterans or players on existing rookie-scale contracts ultimately voting on decisions that impact incoming players who are not even in the NBA.
Well, they're not going to want new guys coming in making more money because their back end's going to be less, right? Yeah,
absolutely. And I think that would still stand. And I have no problem with it. I mean, I think the rookie scale for those players drafted in the first round has only increased every single year. I remember when I started out 15 years ago, the first pick in the draft probably was going to make $4, 5, 6 million in year one. And now it's over 10, over 11, over $12 million. And you can go out there if you're a first, second, or third overall pick. In those 4 years, you can earn $50, $60, $70 million worth of guaranteed money pretty quickly, which is insane. Even as an agent, I don't feel bad for those players. And now the NBA's carved out this second-round exception where there is a limit in what you could spend for second-round picks as well. So I'd like to see all that thing in place. I think it will.
Is that the first few picks or a first round pick making all that money more insane than a guy like PJ Haggerty, who I really don't think will be more than a second round pick? I think he'll be a second round pick. Maybe he'll have this incredible year in A&M, will go a long way. But if they don't, he's making $4 million reportedly with A&M. Will he ever make that much money in the NBA?
I can confidently say no. Great for him. Now, again, I've had this discussion as well, right? And you've seen these numbers thrown around. Flory Badunga going to Louisville from Kansas. Thomas Howe at Florida is going to have a nice payday if he stays at Florida. Not all that money is fully guaranteed. And in the NBA, as a rookie, if you're drafted in the first round, the first 2 years, no matter what, are fully guaranteed. And you really got to muck it up to not get the third year fully guaranteed. But, for example, I just pulled it up. Like this past year, Dave, the number one overall pick, you can get up to 120% of this number, $11.5 million for the first pick. That's 100%. So you talk about even more, over $12 million, close to $13 million.
Wow.
If you're the number one overall pick, like Cooper Flagg was.
Crazy. Great stuff. As always, we appreciate it. Just to let you know, I will be off next week getting my second eye removed of cataracts. Landon Schmidt will be steering the ship next Friday when you're on. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
All right, best of luck. Looking forward to it, Landon.
Yeah, me too. All right, and that is our guy, our rep in Chicago, our agent, Andy Schiffman. He's brought to you by Southern Security. You know, they got 7 Southern Security locations now. They do. And they're a not-for-profit, which means they can do things that other banks cannot. Are you getting the lowest possible rate on your mortgage? You will at Southern. Southern Security offers the lowest rates, flexible terms, no PMI, always great service. The latest in technology. Wait till you see that new bank building in Collierville. It is amazing. They are, I think, the best mortgage lender in all of the Mid-South. You can get all the information you need, become part of the team by going to southernsecurity.org or calling. You can talk to a human being at 901-452-7900. Southern Security is an equal housing lender. They are federally insured by NCUA. Go check it out. Southern Security, your home team credit union. Jonah Dillon on spring football, Grizzlies exit interviews, and a whole lot more. He comes your way in just a minute.
Let Bryant Dacus and Brett Norsworthy take you home every afternoon. Sports Time on Sports 56. Weekdays from 3 to 6 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
I get that. I think they're going to have maybe a fan fest in the fall, but you know, this is sort of a bummer for the fans to see this brand new Charles Huff team and also to see what the stadium kind of looks like now that it's been almost completely redone.
Yeah, it definitely is unfortunate. Obviously, you know, the weather was going to make it difficult, even if they, you know, assuming it's raining and all that type of stuff, a lot of people probably wouldn't have come if they were planning on it because of that. Obviously, you don't want to sit in the rain all day,
right?
If you don't have to. But like you said, I was out there last weekend at the stadium. They practiced there, and there's been a lot of progress made in terms of, you know, the renovations, even in the past couple of months. If you're a Tigers fan, you know, since the last time Memphis played in the stadium, there's been a lot of progress. You can see it on the outside, but you can really see what they've been doing on the interior as well. And then obviously that tunnel has been the big thing over the past couple of months in terms of the progress. Still on track to be finished before the start of next season. So it's possible that whenever they do end up doing that event, maybe it'll be close to being finished or completely finished if it's all the way into the fall. But yeah, it's obviously unfortunate because this was the one opportunity for, you know, fans to see all these new players, right? Because it's about learning new numbers. I wrote a story, you know, the other day before it was canceled, kind of saying, here are some numbers you should look out for. Because if you're a new fan, you might have read some stuff about players that are coming or you saw their stats or whatever, but there's a lot to get to know about this team in terms of numbers and players and kind of guys to know.
I am curious, back to the stadium for 1 second. I've seen it from the outside on Central Avenue and also from behind on Parkway. I've not seen it from the inside yet, and the best view I got of it was from Central. Being closer to it, I don't know if you were inside the suites or not. I don't even know if you're – I guess they're showing people, so they must be allowed to go in. What was your best takeaway about the renovation?
Yeah, well, it's not done yet. Like, we could see kind of from the field looking up at the suites. It's not completed, and they're still doing stuff on there. I know that they can go into some of them, but they're still working on it. It looks totally different. It's weird because, you know, we're used to being there so much over the past couple of years. I'm used to looking at either just an empty hole or, you know, scaffolding, you know, stuff that doesn't look nearly close to being completed. And now you get into the stadium and it looks like a completed football stadium, which, again, it's been a couple of years since we saw that at Memphis, right? So it is cool to see just how they've made that progress on that stuff. And then I'm interested to see, like I said, the tunnel, the north tunnel was still, they're still working on it, so it's not completed. I'm interested to see how that changes the way that everything looks, you know, once they get to the end of this whole process. But it definitely feels different, and it feels much cooler. You know, obviously, that side, that West Tower, looks totally different now and totally modern compared to what the stadium used to look like. So it's really interesting to get a look at it, and I'm sure it'll be even better once they finish the whole project.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what you've seen, and let's throw this caveat out. You only get to see so much of the practices. That is the way most coaches are doing it these days. But by the way, most coaches aren't having spring games anymore either. This was going to be a fan fest. This was watching a practice, not a real game. And I guess that's the way it's going to be into the future from now on. But What did you make? Who do you think would be, let's say, the starting quarterback? Is it going to be Marcus Stokes? Aaron Noland is the third kid that came from Southern Miss. Is he in the mix?
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of heard different things throughout spring. I still feel like, and I've said this before, I think Marcus Stokes has had the edge in terms of the competition over Aaron Noland and Denzel Gardner, who you're talking about from Southern Miss as well. But it just feels like because of the experience, I know it was at the Division II level, and obviously there are questions about how that's going to translate when he moves up to playing at this level. The game is going to be faster. There's going to be more physicality, things like that. But Marcus Stokes is someone who obviously had the pedigree as a recruit and then has proven it at the Division II level. He's one of the best players in Division II last year and put up, you know, pretty great numbers. And obviously, if you look at his film, you can see how that would translate, and specifically how it would translate to Kevin Decker's offense. I think that's also a tell that Kevin Decker really went after this guy and wanted him to be his quarterback, because not only does he think he's a really good quarterback, but he thinks that he fits this scheme specifically. I don't think that it's done by any measure, and if I was Charles Huff, I wouldn't want to name starting quarterbacks before you have to.
Sure.
And I'd obviously want to see as much as I can from all these guys. And like you said, Denzel Gardner was with him at Southern Miss last year, so another guy kind of developing. But, yeah, I think if you're going to ask me right now, I think Marcus Stokes has the edge, and I think people should be excited about what he can bring to this team.
I'm excited about what Kevin Decker brings. He's a disciple of Tim Kramsey, but as he himself said, this will not be Tim Kramsey's offense. This is going to be much more of a spread offense.
Yeah, like I said, it's more, you know, you if you want to look at this type of offense, it's going to be really fast, and it's going to be spread. There's, you know, you're talking about guys are all the way, receivers lined up all the way on the sideline and things like that. And when the play ends, they're going to be basically right back in formation for the next play. So you're not going to have a lot of time to breathe if you're a defense or if you're the play-by-play announcer like you. So that's going to be fun. No, you got to get your stamina up.
Well, I'm not worried about that. I worry about Jarvis Greer because Jarvis is not going to have a chance to say anything. That's going to kill
him. Right, because that's – yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. And look, think about when you've watched South Florida the past couple of years under Alex Golish. That's the type of offense that we're talking about.
Right.
And when you think about it, the play ends, and they're already trying to grab the ball and spot it so they can get a playoff within 10 seconds or something. There's nothing in the middle. You know, even if you're the defense, you don't really have time to call a play or do anything. You just got to get back in formation and get ready to go. And that's the point of the offense. They're trying to catch you off guard, and it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out at the beginning of the season.
On the other side of the ball, the Guidry defense, Lance's defense is a 4-2-5. I was thinking about this. I know for sure, going back to Norvell, that the Memphis D has had three down linemen, and they've mixed it up with the number of linebackers or DBs they're going to play, depending on personnel they were facing a lot. This will be different. And, you know, a lot of the times teams like Memphis go to three down linemen because that's the toughest of the supply and demand entities there is. What do you think of the way this will look?
Yeah, I mean, look, it really makes a couple specific positions really important, and you need guys who are going to fill those positions, and I think they're set to do that, right? You need a nickel corner who's really versatile and can really just be a playmaker, and Ian Foster is that player, and so I think he's going to play a big role. And then those two linebackers, super, super important, right? Because if you think about what you've watched from Memphis the past couple of years with the three down linemen, part of the defense was kind of set up for the linebackers to succeed, to have range around the field and be able to make all those tackles. You had three of them trying to do that. Now you're going to have two, which means you need them to be kind of tackling machine type players. Mike Montgomery is again, he's going to be one of those guys. He had over 100 tackles last year at Southern Miss.
Yeah, a lot.
And then, like you said, up front, there's going to be more, obviously more guys there. You would hope that you can find consistent pass rush, right? We haven't really seen that from Memphis the past couple of years with the scheme they've run. With the 4-2-5, you would hope, you know, if Jamon Tapp is one of those guys who's going to play a big role up there, you hope you can get a pass rush and really affect the quarterback on the other side.
All right, real quick, switching gears, we've got about a minute and a half. Tell me your thoughts on the Zach Kleiman, Tuomas Isolo player exit interviews this past week with the Grizz.
Yeah, I mean, we heard, I think, less from Zach Kleiman than we had maybe at the trade deadline. He didn't really elaborate on a lot of stuff, specifically Ja, you know, questions that he was asked that he didn't really answer to a certain extent. Like, I think, you know, I asked him about the injuries over the past couple of years. He didn't really want to touch that. The stuff he said about Ja Morant was not as interesting or as kind of deep as the stuff he said at the trade deadline. And it makes sense, obviously, like they're going into the offseason and he doesn't know what's going to happen. He doesn't know what draft pick they're going to have. He doesn't know what the trade market is going to be for any of his players as they kind of try to build this thing. But I don't think that we necessarily learned a lot about what they're doing. You know, they're still excited about the core they have, the young players that they're going to try to build around, Zach Edey, Cedric Howard, obviously, among them. But it's going to be tough. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out because there's a lot of different directions I think this thing could go, even over the next month or the next couple months they get to the draft.
Well, you got to wait on the lottery. Then you got to figure that all out with your draft. And then I think after that, they'll trade Ja for other pieces. You're right. It's going to be a while before we see the finished picture, but it'll be fun watching anyway. And Jonah, we'll talk about it as the weeks go on. Thank you much. I know you'll be here next Friday.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That is Jonah Dillon from The Commercial Appeal. That'll do it for us. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you bright and early Monday morning. Johnny Radio's next.